The School on the Hill. Agnes Park walked up the hill north of town on a Monday morning in September with a carpet bag in one hand and a letter in the other, and when she reached the top, she stopped and looked at what she had come for. The University of Nevada occupied a shelf of land above the Truckee Meadows, 10 acres of sagebrush and dirt, and three buildings that looked, from a distance, like a small ranch that had wandered away from its cattle. Morrill Hall was the largest, a brick building with tall windows and a cupola that was visible from Virginia Street on a clear day. A dormitory stood to the east. A machine shop, built mostly by students, sat behind it like an afterthought. Agnes was 17 years old. She was the daughter of a cattle rancher who ran 600 head on land north of Sparks, and she was the first person in her family to attend a university. Her father had driven her to the edge of town that morning in the ranch wagon, and she had walked the rest of the way because he said the horses needed to be back for the afternoon feed, which was true, and because he did not know what to say to her at the gate of a place he had never been, which was also true. "Learn something useful," he had said from the wagon seat. She intended to. The letter was from the registrar's office, confirming her admission for the autumn term of 1904. It listed her courses: English composition, algebra, natural philosophy, and Latin. It noted that female students were expected to observe curfew at 8 o'clock in the evening and to conduct themselves in a manner befitting the institution. It did not say what befitting meant. Agnes suspected it meant different things for different people. She found the dormitory and carried her carpet bag up the stairs to a room on the second floor that she would share with a girl from Carson City named Edith, who had arrived the day before and who had already claimed the bed by the window. The room was small: 2 iron beds, 2 desks, 2 chairs, a washstand with a white pitcher. The walls were bare plaster. The window faced north, toward the mountains, which were brown at the base and white at the peaks, and held the light in a way that made them look closer than they were. "Are you the rancher's daughter?" Edith asked. "I'm Agnes. They said a rancher's daughter was coming, from Sparks. North of Sparks."
Edith looked at Agnes's carpet bag, which was worn at the corners and closed with a leather strap that had been repaired twice. She did not comment on it. Agnes appreciated this. There were 46 students enrolled that fall, roughly a third of them women. The campus was quiet in a way that Agnes had not expected. She had imagined a university would be noisy, full of argument and conversation, the way the stockyard in Sparks was noisy on auction day. Instead, it was quiet in the way a church is quiet, not from emptiness but from concentration, from people turning their attention inward and holding it there. Her natural philosophy class was taught by a man named Stubbs, who was also the president of the university, which struck Agnes as improbable until she learned that the university had a faculty of 12, and that several of them taught multiple subjects and performed administrative duties besides. President Stubbs taught physics and philosophy and ran the institution, and still found time to write letters to the state legislature asking for money, which the legislature sometimes provided and sometimes did not. The class met in a room on the first floor of Morrill Hall, around a long table, and Stubbs stood at one end and lectured without notes. He talked about motion and force and the behavior of light in a way that was precise, without being cold, the way Agnes's father talked about cattle, with respect for the thing being described. She liked this. She liked the table and the room and the sound of chalk on the blackboard and the smell of the building, which was dust and plaster, and the faint sweetness of the sagebrush that grew right up to the foundation. She liked walking between the dormitory and Morrill Hall in the mornings, when the valley below was filled with a low fog that made the town of Reno disappear entirely, leaving only the cupola of the courthouse and the tops of the tallest buildings on Virginia Street floating above the white like the masts of ships. In October, the wind came. It blew from the west, hard and dry, and it carried the smell of the desert into the classrooms and rattled the windows in their frames. Agnes walked to class with her head down and her coat buttoned to the throat and thought about her father's ranch, where the wind was the same wind but felt different because there was nothing to protect you from it. Here, at least, there were walls. She wrote her first composition on a Saturday afternoon, sitting at the desk in her room while Edith napped. The assignment was to describe a place. Agnes described the ranch, the way the land looked at dawn in November when the frost was on the grass and the cattle stood in groups with their breath rising and the sky was the color of a new nail. She wrote it in simple sentences because complicated sentences made her suspicious, and she turned it in on Monday, and on Wednesday, the instructor returned it with a note at the top that said, "This is good. Write more like this." She kept the paper. She would keep it for the rest of her life, folded into the letter from the registrar's office, two documents that together formed the record of the day. Her life changed direction. By November, she had settled into a routine. Classes in the morning, study in the afternoon, supper in the dining hall, which was a room in the dormitory basement where students ate at long tables and talked about their courses and their homes and the weather, which in Reno in November was a subject of genuine consequence. The first snow fell on the mountains in late October and worked its way down through November until by December it lay on the campus itself, a thin white layer that crunched underfoot and melted by noon. She went home for Christmas. Her father met her at the edge of town with the wagon and the same two horses, and a silence that was not awkwardness, but something closer to pride, the kind of pride that does not know how to speak without diminishing itself. "Learn anything useful?" he asked. She thought about motion and force and the behavior of light and the way a well-made sentence could hold an entire landscape inside it. "Some," she said. They rode north toward the ranch. The university sat on its hill behind them, 3 buildings and 10 acres of sage, small enough to miss if you didn't know where to look.
Historical note: the University of Nevada relocated from Elko to Reno in 1885. By 1904, enrollment was approximately 50 students, and the campus consisted of Morrill Hall, a dormitory, and a few smaller structures on 10 acres north of downtown. Joseph Stubbs served as university president from 1894 to 1914, overseeing significant growth. The Mackay family's transformative donations to the university began in 1907, founding the Mackay School of Mines and funding several campus buildings.